The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Sir Keir Starmer has called for cool heads. The Prime Minister's spokesperson has said that the Prime Minister wants all parties to de-escalate the conflict between Iran and Israel, and is quoted as saying the continuation of the current situation is in no one's interest. We want to see cool heads and a return to diplomacy because that is the best route forward. With me is John Simpson, the BBC World Affairs editor. John, as you look at the situation now, do you see much prospect of cool heads emerging?
No, I don't think so. Sadly, Anton, I think that really the scene at the moment belongs to the toughest, angriest, and noisiest people. People like the Israeli defense minister, who has said openly that he wants to kill. He wants Israel's forces to kill the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei. It's that kind of rhetoric that's winning the day at the moment. And calmness and cool heads, well, let's hope that they exist and let's hope that they actually are in charge. But, you know, we're not hearing statements that would make you think that.
So what of the politics of this, John? Because one of the things that President Trump had long tried to characterize himself as was a president of peace who ended wars rather than starting them. Does that mean that he is incentivized to keep that reputation by doing something to cool this down?
Well, I just think that he's thinking it through. He's decided that joining in on Israel's side is probably going to be better for him than staying out and trying to establish a peace negotiation at the moment. Clearly, his supporters are very much divided. There's a lot of MAGA supporters who back him because they hate all the foreign interventions that America's been going through in the last 25 years and want just to sort of let the world do what it wants and America just kind of looking after its own interests. And then others, and there's a lot of them, Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, for instance, think that the best way forward is to wipe Iran off the map, if that's a possibility. Actually, I don't think it is, but that's what people are suggesting at the moment.
You get the sense, though, that Donald Trump does sense there being a significant red line between notional support of Israel and armament of Israel versus overt engagement, because it was reported in a number of outlets that he had signed off on the war plans from Israel. He has since come out very strongly to say that he didn't sign off on them. I think he gets that's a Rubicon, does he?
Well, I think that is the kind of center of it, for as far as he's concerned. There's a lot of technical questions aside from the overarching kind of political ones. I mean, is it really possible for those bunker busting bombs that only the Americans have, those 60,000 pound penetrating bombs, which can possibly reach down into the Ferdow Mountain and just kind of destroy whatever Iran has there in its uranium enriching plant, deep down something like 300-400 meters below the ground. There is a question whether those even the bunker busting bombs can deal with that, can destroy it. And of course, what would be the point of just doing a lot of damage when it would be perfectly possible for Iran, as has happened in the past, simply to get its act together again and start creating another nuclear enriching program. I mean, I think the key thing really is whether the regime in Iran would be toppled by all of these bombs, all of these attacks. And a wider question, of course, do we really want to topple the regime? Might not something even worse take over?
Although presumably Israel is so emboldened by the international community's capacity to complain but achieve nothing in recent weeks, that they see this as a unique opportunity.
Yes, and in many ways it is a unique opportunity. The possibility of having a president in the United States who's certainly very sympathetic and possibly might go further than that and actually join in their war against Iran. I mean, that's something which, of course, they didn't have under Joe Biden and probably won't have under the next president, whoever that may be. So now, if you're Israel, the logic is go for it now and wipe out the Ayatollahs if you possibly can.
Now, where does Russia stand in all this? Because I saw you commenting earlier today that this can't be good from their perspective, given that Iran functions as a Russian client state.
Yes, I mean, you know, Russia has lost Syria, for instance, which was a terrible loss for them last December when the Assad regime collapsed. This could be even worse in some ways for Russia. Iran provides them with a lot of their drones for the war in Ukraine and a lot of support of different kinds, not actually troop support, unlike North Korea, which, of course, as we know, has sent several thousand troops to Ukraine. But nevertheless, a lot of useful backup, which Russia's been getting. Russia has supplied Iran with a certain amount of anti-aircraft capability, anti-missile, anti-aircraft capability. Well, that has been pretty disastrous. It hasn't seemed to have functioned at all. I mean, there have been rumors about Israeli jets coming down, being shot down, but nothing has been confirmed. And it doesn't look to me as though any plane has actually been shot down. So another difficult thing for Russia. I mean, it must. India, for instance, which has used a lot of Russian munitions over the years, has bought a great deal of missile systems and other systems. They must be really worried about the value of what they've bought. And China, the same. So not that China's bought anything much from Russia, but it's modeled a lot of its defensive and offensive weapons on Russian models. So, you know, all together, this is a bad time for Russia.
What are the implications for the rest of the world in this? Because we've seen an increase in militarization, particularly in Europe. We've seen Finland joining NATO, which at one point, fairly recently, it regarded as a choice it didn't want to make. We've seen massive increase in defense spending across Europe. We've seen what Israel has been doing in Gaza and now the conflict with Iran. And we have seen global tensions everywhere ramping up. Is there a sense that the world is marching towards at least militarism, at worst war?
Well, it's marching. I don't think it is marching, actually, but I mean, I think it's sort of moving in the direction of greater hostility and greater self-defense. There's no doubt about that. Those long years, which have covered my fairly long life, I'm 80, where defense was always sort of number four, number five in in Britain, for instance, and in most European countries, was certainly not an important element in a key element in governance. That now has changed. It's not possible. I mean, people are always talking about, you know, where we might have been in the had this been the 20th century, and the obviously people are saying this is like the 30s. In Western Europe, the danger always is that the more you ramp up your defences, the angrier you get with your neighbours, the more likely it is that the weapons that you're creating will one day be used. So this is a dangerous time. It's not. My own personal opinion is that it's nothing like as dangerous as life was during the worst of the Cold War in the 70s and early 80s. But nevertheless, it is still very, very disturbing, yes.
And lastly, John, to what extent do you think that the things that we are witnessing are actually counterproductive? I mean, I look at the assaults on Gaza and think back to Irish history, and it's hard to see them as anything other than a very effective recruitment tool for Hamas. Likewise, I would have thought the one message that the Israeli action sends out to Iran and to any state like it is, get nuclear weapons as quick as you can.
Well, yes. I don't think I agree about that, actually. I think that any country which is thinking about nuclear weapons will realize that it could be setting itself up as a target for other countries that don't want it to get nuclear weapons. So I'm not sure I'd agree totally about that. I mean, I think what's happening here is that Israel has gone way beyond what it used to be, and it has become a real. It's always been, of course, the major force, really, in the Middle East, but it was always fighting defensive wars in the past. Now it's fighting wars of choice, wars that it chooses to take, whether it's wiping out Hamas, even though wiping out, as you rather suggest, is something which is an impossibility, or getting rid of the Islamic Republic in Iran, which may well happen. I mean, if it does happen, there'll be a lot of people who'll say to themselves, well, don't like Israel, don't like what it's doing, but it's done the world a favor by taking out one of the least pleasant regimes anywhere in the world. And I think that'll be if Iran does shake off the rule of the Ayatollahs and gets the kind of regime, for instance, that we've got in Syria at the moment. I mean, people from a very deeply questionable background who've chosen to come together with their former rivals to create a stable government. If that happened, I don't know whether it's possible, but if it does happen in Iran, then I don't think Israel would be regarded as the sort of pariah state that many, many people around the world think it is today.
John, thank you very much for that analysis. That's John Simpson, BBC World Affairs editor.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.